Hello and welcome to another edition of the Rider Report podcast. I'm your host, as always, Mark Smith, and with us is our CFL insider, Matt Sheridan. And Matt, we got a Rider win to talk about this week after the Saskatchewan Roughriders kicked off the season with a 27-19 victory over the Toronto Argonauts in week one. And it was a game where the defense looked absolutely dominant. The offense got better as the game went on, but that defensive performance was something else for the Riders in that week one game.
It really was. I was surprised that everyone was executing the way they were at this point in the season. I mean, again, we talk about this on a regular basis, season after season. The first six, potentially nine games, not a whole lot of quote-unquote value in terms of how you go in the standings. And generally, it takes these guys a little bit of time to get going. But I think a lot of those moves that Chris Jones and the Riders made in the offseason are paying dividends really early on in terms of having some experienced veterans. Some of the things I was seeing out of that defensive group, throwing in some zone drops from the defensive line, a lot of lateral shifting, really confusing the offensive line and allowing them to get some pressure. I mean, obviously, the statistics for Hughes and Jefferson, that combo, are pretty good. Yeah. If they can hold up that pace, this is going to be a fun season for that defensive unit. You can't argue with performance. You really can't.
How you mentioned the fact that they have a lot of veterans on that defense with Nick Marshall, who's now on the six-game injury list, being the only rookie that was starting on that defense. How much did that play into the fact that they're able to have a quick start? Because it's a lot of guys who, A, have either been in Saskatchewan for the last couple of years in that Riders defense, or guys who are veterans coming in that know how to play in the CFL. How much does that factor into it?
The value of having a predominantly veteran presence on the starting defensive unit is incalculable. This is something, a story that I recount quite often about, you know, the dynamic during camp. You know, it's one thing, a lot of these guys probably never even heard of Saskatchewan, let alone being able to spell it or point it out on a map, or even understand some of the nuances of the Canadian game. And a lot of these guys who play in the defensive secondary, especially, they come to the CFL without understanding that little twist where it's, you know, unlimited motion. Yeah. So all of a sudden, day three, day four camp, and you've got six guys running at the line of scrimmage, and he, as a defensive back, it's a very difficult job in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now you've got guys who've got a running start, and they're running route combinations, and you've got to be comfortable in how you're passing off your zones, depending on where guys are going. So it's really easy to tell when you've got rookies, and we talked about this last year with Saskatchewan secondary. We could see early in the season where there were mistakes with communication, mistakes with passing off routes and players. Not so much this year. Everyone understands and accepts their responsibility, and it paid dividends in terms of their performance on the field.
Yeah, it was something to watch. As you mentioned, the D-line was pretty outstanding. The linebackers looked great. Moncrief had a monster game.
Eight tackles. Yeah.
He was monstrous. And the DBs, I think, looked the most solid they have under the 3 years that Chris Jones has been here.
And this is the symbiotic nature of how things go with football on the either side, offense and defense. And in the defensive unit, your secondary looks good when you can get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Even Marshall's interception for touchdown. Mm-hmm. If you watch that play, it was the defensive line getting pressure, getting their hands up into the passing lane, and I do believe that ball was actually tipped.
Yeah, I think Jefferson got a piece of it.
Yeah, you can see Jefferson in the clips. He goes up, he's got both hands in the air, and he tips that ball, it redirects it, and Marshall's able to step in front, grab it, and run it back for six. Getting the offense out of their rhythm, making them throw a pass they don't want to, throw a pass sooner than they would ideally like to, really disrupts the entire rhythm of that offensive unit. The orchestration is totally off, and it puts them on their heels. So if Saskatchewan's defensive unit is able to continue this pressure, continue this performance, wow, there's a lot of optimism, I think, for what they're going to be able to accomplish.
We just talked a lot about the defense. What did you think of the offense? I felt like they got stronger as the game went on and as they started to kind of get comfortable with each other. What did you see out of them in week one?
balanced and consistent. Kolaros looks sharp, sharper than he did in the preseason.
Lots of targets. He used everyone in his receiving corps.
He did. He was all over the place. Very Kevin Glenn-esque in his distribution of the football. I am, you know, being a former O-lineman, I'm a big fan and advocate of running the football. And that 1-2 punch of Messam and Stacey, I think, is going to be an electric combination to watch this year. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we're going to get Marcus Thigpen back after this week, serving a suspension right now. So I think there's a lot of explosive potential with that offensive unit. And what I saw is cause for optimism, no doubt.
Yeah, I think I was a little iffy about them going into the game, but I came out of it going, okay, that's something with the defense they have, that's something they can work with for sure. If it's a ball control, take their shots when they are open kind of offense, I think that's fine with the defense that they're going to have.
And we haven't even really seen how Chris Jones intends to use Kolaros and Bridge.
Yeah.
And that adds another element to it as well. So I think there's a lot left in the playbook, a lot left tactically that we can see from the offensive unit. So definitely some reasons for optimism in Ryderville.
Yeah, Messam was good. I don't think he was fantastic. He made some big runs and got some key yards late in the game. And I think Trey Mason also looked pretty good in his first action too, taking those.
It wasn't Stacey.
They released Stacey.
Yeah, right? It was Mason.
But he looked good, and we'll fill that role nicely until Thigpen gets back. And then you have three weapons when Thigpen gets back too.
And this is a testament to what that front office was able to do in the offseason. And this is a hallmark of Chris Jones's career as a coach, as a team official, and an executive, is that recruiting, being able to understand how all the pieces of his puzzle fit together, and being able to motivate everybody and put them in a position to be successful. And of course, that's a nice little segue into our friend Duran.
Yes, Nick Marshall, who we talked about, was one of the stars of that game in week one. On the 6-game injured list now, with an injury that he picked up late in that game. And Daron Carter is going to fill in the hole for them on defense. What do you think about this decision to move Daron? It's going to be his second start at defensive back after making the start last year against Calgary and getting a pick six in that game. All the reviews so far from Chris Jones have been good about him. What do you think?
Well, again, you can't argue with performance. Yeah. There was so much speculation last year before that Calgary game about whether he was going to be able to be competitive and walk the walk, as much as we all know Carter likes to talk the talk. And sure enough, he went out and had more than respectable performance.
Yeah.
And I think we can see that again. And of course, Duran is being Duran in a not so subtle, some would interpret as a slightly passive aggressive way, talking a little smack about how Ottawa's receivers are really nothing to be concerned about. And of course, we're talking about guys like, you know, Ellingson and Deontay Spencer
and Brad Sinopoli,
you know, some very accomplished individuals playing wide receiver in this league. And Duran is exuding the same ultra level of confidence that we would expect from him. And this is a situation that sometimes I think it's best to go through early in the season. You know, it's good to test your depth, to find out who can fill in case of an injury, because the reality is, again, this game is not checkers. And this is a hallmark of championship teams, is do you have the depth to be able to survive and overcome an injury, a major injury, a 6-game injury to one of your starters.
Does this come down to Chris Jones maybe feeling that the drop-off between from Daron Carter to the backup wide receiver is less than from Daron Carter to the next best DB? Do you think that's kind of plays into it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Being a head coach in pro sports is about asset management.
Yeah.
Absolutely, that's a factor in it. To what extent?
Yeah.
We will never know, likely, but that's a great point.
Yeah. Other thoughts from week one? We saw Calgary pick up the win over Hamilton. Johnny Manziel didn't touch the field. Masoli looked pretty competent in that game, despite Calgary picking up the win. And BC picked up the victory over Montreal. I guess your thoughts on the rest of week one?
Well, we talked last week about one of the potential issues for Edmonton is the fact that Joel Figueroa left, their left tackle, all-star left tackle, left to go to BC, and we saw some issues with Edmonton and Riley getting pressured, and you know, Winnipeg keying on that deficiency in their protection. And of course, the offensive line coach in Edmonton these days is Mike Gibson, a gentleman that I am most familiar with, and I shivered actually a little bit watching that very late and record-setting Winnipeg game, thinking and contemplating about what the film session might be like the following day and the kind of exuberant feedback that Mike Gibson might be providing with a little bit of spittle and some definite volume.
And you're, it's not like you're speaking from experience.
No, not at all. Never. Montreal, that offense is a bit of a hot mess. Drew Willey struggled. That pick he threw late in the game was... That was a tough one to swallow, I would imagine, for him. Not to mention, I mean, it's an 8-yard pass, and the guy is sitting right in front of him and still pulls the trigger on it. Not to excuse some of the decision-making, but that offensive line struggled too. I have a visceral reaction to watching a football game and watching a quarterback go down, especially behind the line of scrimmage, and offensive linemen just stop and turn around and walk away from a teammate who's on the ground, and even worse if he's on the ground because of your mistake. There is something inside of me that if I wasn't such a cultured and enlightened individual, I would be hollering at the TV and throwing things.
So I want to tell a story about you.
Okay.
We're down in Texas. I can tell you, me and Matt both work with the Selects football program, and we were down in Texas, and I know this play happened many times where the quarterback gets knocked down, the O-line, young O-lineman learning the game, go and start lining up again, and Matt just loses it on them every time, and I love it.
Yeah, well, you got to
get ingrained in early.
That's right, and it's about repetition. Yeah. It's about, you know, positive and sometimes a little negative feedback, you know, but motivating them, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
The other big surprise coming out of that Edmonton-Winnipeg game was Strevler.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
He looks competent.
Where did this guy come from? He's got that quick Dan Marino-esque release. You know, it was the Dakota connection between him and Dressler.
Yeah.
And wow, did he look good.
Yeah. Winnipeg was right in that game, obviously, with Riley driving for the last second win. But
absolutely, I don't think anyone could have foreseen that kind of performance. He really came out and made a statement. And hopefully we get to see more of him. And I mean, if he keeps progressing, you know, there's a kind of an unspoken rule a lot of times in football that you don't lose your job to injury. But at the same time, this is a performance-driven industry. And if the guy that steps into your place happens to actually be better than you, regardless of whether he's a rookie or not, a head coach has a tough time putting that previous starter back in there and disrupting that rhythm and momentum.
You usually see that starter go in again, but with a very short leash.
Yes.
And that change usually comes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that's kind of been the dynamic we've seen in Montreal the last couple of years.
There's a lot of short leashes in Montreal.
How many names can we tick off here that have happened?
Not quite at Cleveland Browns territory yet with the long list of jerseys.
They really are approaching that, though. Yeah. They are the Cleveland Browns of the CFL at this point in terms of that turnover and dysfunction of that quarterback position ever since Calvillo retired 4 years ago.
Definitely. Let's move on to an issue that's kind of spilled into this week. In the BC Lions-Montreal game on Saturday, a fan ran onto the field. He got absolutely destroyed by one of the Lions players, Marcel Young, which was a great hit. Let's give him credit on that. The fan has now hired a lawyer and is contemplating a lawsuit or something like that because the injuries don't come on the field.
He's claiming all kinds of injuries.
Yeah.
And now this relates to an issue that we don't see a whole lot of anymore.
No.
And I sent you an article this morning. I went digging, and I, in fact, witnessed an incident like this early in my career in Winnipeg. It was a playoff game in November of 2002 against the BC Lions. And there was a linebacker who used to play for the Lions named Carl Kitt. And let me tell you, Carl was as salty as they came. A current player that reminds me of Carl is Caris Hébert.
Yeah.
Very similar style, very energetic, very forceful. And a fan ran onto the field, and in this case, actually went straight at Carl. And Carl defended himself. And if you read the quotes and the article from that day and time, you know, it's, you know, we're, you know, it's November of 2002. We're, you know, 14 months removed from 9/11 and deep in the fear and hysteria that followed that for a number of years. So any kind of attack, any kind of instigation is going to be met with force.
Yeah.
And Carl proceeded to show this guy what's what, and a couple other guys came over and aided in showing this guy what's what, and he got carted off the field and was charged with creating a nuisance, and that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the fundamental differences between this new incident is that this fan was running down the field and Marcel Jung went over to the fan and instigated. He wasn't approached. The fan wasn't coming after the player. So I think from a legal perspective, that's going to be a central issue.
Yeah. My thing is, Kate, so the guy's drunk and breaking the law by trespassing on the field. What grounds should he have, honestly? Like, you're breaking the law. You're going into this guy's area. These guys are trained to hurt people. What did you think was going to happen?
Aha, exactly. Now, this gets complicated because, unfortunately, in our current legal environment, they're going to bring out terms like duty of care and all kinds of reasonable response and, you know, who instigated it. And I think this, unfortunately, and quite sadly, has the potential to become a big distraction. Yeah. And hopefully, cooler heads, wiser heads prevail, and this lawsuit or the threat of it disappears, and that there's some kind of mediation, and we can resolve this and get on with the business of playing football.
Yeah.
And hopefully BC Place is able to revise their policies, which according to the media is, well, if the fan isn't, you know, it's hands off, because you don't want to, you know, get handsy with people these days because of how litigious our culture, quite frustratingly, has become, even though we are in Canada, and we have, I believe it's called tort law in the States, where, you know, if anything happens, you can sue somebody and you're liable. So hopefully, hopefully we see this issue go away and we can start concentrating more on how the BC Lions are doing on the football field instead of all the legalities off of it.
Yeah, instead of an idiot on the field.
Yeah, you know what? And the sad part is this guy's probably going to wear it like a badge of honor for a good couple of years, too.
I wouldn't be wearing the photos of him bouncing off the turf as a badge of honor.
No, but he went to a Lions game, and he got nailed by, you know, a BC Lions player. And you know,
survived.
It would be interesting to creep this guy on Facebook and see if he's posted the meme or the video or something on there, kind of going, hey, look what
happened
to me.
He's smart if he wants to win his legal case. He's smart and wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and how often are people smart when it comes to social media?
True. Speaking of social media, let's talk some Terrell Owens, who has been making noise on social media. The 44-year-old NFL or Pro Football Hall, soon to be Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee.
Even though he's not going to attend.
Yeah, even though he's declined his invitation to go. Made some noise by running a 4.440 at 40-yard dash at the age of 44. So that's some pretty big news. And with that video, the Edmonton Eskimos decided to add him to their negotiation list, because why not? Let's. Do you think we'll see Terrell Owens in the CFL, and would you give a 44-year-old Terrell Owens a shot?
Well, giving him a shot, if it's talent, you can't deny it, right? You've got to entertain the notion at the very least. Okay. Right? In the CFL, it's about, can you play? We don't necessarily subscribe to all of the metrics and the testing as much as the NFL does. That's the hallmark of the CFL, is you get guys who, you know, perhaps were deemed, you know, a little too short, a la Doug Flutie, or too slow, or too this, or too that, to compete in the NFL, and they're able to come up to Canada, and the quintessential question is, can you play football? Doesn't matter if you're, you know, too short or whatever the case may be. But the other case is, if you don't put Terrell Owens on your neg list, somebody else is going to. Let's be honest, right? And of course, what came out today as well, another recent cast off is Christian Hackenberg, as a quarterback. For those who don't follow football, a very precipitous decline in this young man's football career. Yeah. Was second round pick of the New York Jets 2 years ago.
Yes, and he's been released by the Jets and the Raiders.
Oakland Raiders. Had a cup of coffee with the Raiders, and Gruden kicked him to the curb. The guy's never played in a game in the NFL and didn't even make it through a week of off-season practices with the Raiders, which is really, really rare. Because in the NFL, where you're selected in the draft, which round,
generally
speaks to
how long you're going to stick around for,
Right, and a lot of it has to do with the guaranteed contracts that exist now. So, you know, if you're, as a team, you're on the hook for a guy's contract for 3 or 4 years, you're going to keep him around and get what you can out of that investment. Yeah. But that doesn't seem to be the case with Hackenberg, who also is now on Edmonton's neg list.
Yeah.
And, I mean, never say never, right? That's the wonderful thing, to some extent, about this game is, you know, anything can happen, and everyone's only a play away. Yeah. Unfortunately, that usually means somebody getting hurt catastrophically, which we don't necessarily like to see. But such is the nature of the game that we choose to watch and love.
Well, 5 years ago, he would have never told me Johnny Football would be in the CFL. So
no, exactly, and that's a great example is Johnny Manziel. You know, here's a kid who's got the world at his feet, and you know, winning the Heisman Trophy, and you know, has all kinds of potential, and you know, the stars are the limit, and self-destructs. Yeah.
Going back to Terrell Owens, so he's 44 right now.
Yes.
Jerry Rice played his last season in the NFL at 42.
Correct.
So it's kind of comparable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Bob Cameron, now granted, there's part of me that has a hard time saying that punters and kickers are football players, but at the same time, he was competitive and played until he was 48, 47.
Well, there's been kickers in the NFL that have went to
Adam
50.
Vinatieri right now is 45 this year.
There was the
CFL, Louis Pisaglia.
The Andersons, Gary Anderson.
Morton Anderson.
Yeah, those guys.
All those guys. It is possible if you take care of yourself.
Well, look at Owens, he's not a guy that doesn't look like he doesn't take care of his body. Like, he's in perfect shape, still running a 4.440. Like,
absolutely, that speaks to his abilities and his durability. And he's also, you know, training some current NFL superstars, Julio Jones in Atlanta, and works with other guys. So, if there's even the remote possibility that he could compete, they would say yes.
Yeah.
The real question is, would Terrell Owens, at the age of 44, come to Edmonton to play for, and let's be honest, what would be a very small fraction of what he earned at his heyday in the NFL, just for an opportunity to play?
And how long before he and Mike Riley are screaming at each other on the sidelines?
And how long before he realizes, wait a minute, it's only 2 weeks and there's going to be snow on the ground.
I'm out. I think he wants an NFL shot is more what he's looking for than CFL.
But, yeah, I would agree.
But kudos to Edmonton for throwing him on the neg list.
Absolutely. It gets some media attention, brings a spotlight to the league and to the Eskimos. So in that respect, it's all good.
For sure. Let's talk week two and the picks for week two here in the CFL. Last week, I was right. We were both right. Edmonton over Winnipeg. I had Saskatchewan. You had Toronto. That was the only one we were differed on. And we were both right on Calgary and BC. So 4-0 for me, 3-1 for Matt. Good start to the year. I like that.
Of course it is.
And let's talk week two. Starts with the Thursday night game. Saskatchewan in Ottawa to take on the Red Blacks, who are opening up their season after a bye in week one. Who do you have in this Thursday night football game?
This is a lot tougher decision than it should be in week two, because we're talking about a rested but untested Ottawa team with Trevor Harris at the helm, and going against a Saskatchewan team that we saw last week has surprised a lot of people. So I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. I'm going with the Riders.
You're riding the Rider bandwagon. Riders yes. practiced at Parliament Hill yesterday.
They did.
So apparently, by all accounts, we're a pretty loose team out there having some fun. Joined in a yoga class, apparently, that was happening on Parliament Hill as well. So,
oh, wow. That yeah. must have been fun.
Yeah. I'm sticking with the Riders, too.
I think, all right.
I think they're feeling it after week one. Won't be too overconfident going into Ottawa. I know they think they're still a tough test, despite what Jerron Carter has to say. So I think the Riders go in there and win a tight game. I said 26-20 this morning. Morning on the radio, so is my pick.
6-point spread, that's not bad.
Let's go to Friday night, a doubleheader on Friday night. Winnipeg in Montreal to start things off.
Oh, that's Winnipeg. is Strebler can have a repeat or even increase or improve on his performance from last week. I don't think this is going to be a problem.
And Winnipeg's defense is much better than BC's defense, and I think they'll have a tough Montreal will have a tough time moving the ball against Winnipeg's D.
And Winnipeg's offense is pretty stacked. Yeah. If you look at that huddle and look at some of the names on the back of those jerseys, yeah. there's some big-time players yeah. there. There's a yeah. lot of weapons for this young quarterback to take advantage yeah. of, and great supporting cast yeah. for him. So
let's both go on Winnipeg on that one. I think that's pretty okay. easy to say.
Agreed.
Hamilton continues their West Division road trip to start the year. They're in Edmonton after losing in Calgary last week. The Eskimos coming off that win in Winnipeg. Who do you have for the second half of the Friday night doubleheader?
I'm going to go with Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Yeah.
After the week in Alberta?
Yep.
I think they're going to...
Yeah, I think that Masoli's going to have a breakout game. I think that they're going to correct some of their mistakes. I think they got a lot of potential. And I think they're going to identify and exploit some chinks in Edmonton's armor.
Okay. I still think Edmonton. I can't pick against Mike Riley, especially this early in the season at home.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with the Edmonton train and have Mike Riley pick up the victory in that one.
Alrighty.
Saturday, the final game of the week, has Calgary heading to Toronto. Toronto obviously coming off that loss in Saskatchewan, and Calgary picking up the win over Hamilton. Who do you have in the week two matchup between these two teams?
I'm going to go Toronto. I know that that seems counterintuitive. I really do, but it's at home.
Mm-hmm.
They're due. They're the defending champions. There's no way they're going to let Calgary come in and show them up at home.
Yeah, I should say this is a rematch of last year's
Absolutely
Grey Cup game.
It is, yeah. So. Early in the season. So this is, to me, this is kind of the marquee matchup. Yeah. As much as, I mean, I understand this is the Rider podcast. So, yes. Of course, the Rider game is always the marquee.
And it's the Thursday night game.
It is the
With
first
the nice
one.
New song.
Yeah, kicking off the weekend. But this rematch, I'm going to go with the Argos.
You stole my thunder, honestly. I was going Argos, too. That's
okay.
Problem with picking second. I don't know. Calgary just, they were good in week one, but they didn't seem like the same old Calgary. They didn't have that same kind of feeling to them. Yeah. And as Toronto, they struggled early, too. I don't think Ricky Ray would say he had the greatest game, but he was also under some intense pressure throughout that whole game, and that's not exactly... Ricky Ray's not scrambling out of that pressure too often, so I think Toronto bounced back and wins at home this week.
All right. Wow, we got three of the same picks this week. Our only dissent is Hamilton and Edmonton.
Yeah. We'll see okay. where that one goes, and weird for both of us to pick Toronto, I thought.
It is.
I thought I was going against the grain.
It is.
But no.
Make sure you buy a lotto ticket this week.
Let's do that. That does it for our picks. Both on Saskatchewan, both on Winnipeg. Matt has Hamilton, I have Edmonton, and both on Toronto over Calgary on Saturday. So we'll see how those play out, and we'll see what week two holds in the CFL. Thanks for sitting down with us, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
And you can find the podcast, as always, at discovermoosejaw.com.